I'm sure most of you know that I'm a native San Franciscan, and this is a happy week. I feel I'm gonna be sick tomorrow. I feel something coming on. Okay, so thank you all. I have to say, a lot of friends in the audience. I want to thank Paul for asking me to help present part of his presentation. I think you can view Paul's as kind of like a macro view, and mine is going to be a little bit more of a micro view, since I'm going to be talking about one, you know, somewhat small aspect of the dental care delivery system. And in fact, it's even, as Paul mentioned, the total safety net, they estimate it's about 10 million people derive their care. And I'm going to be talking pretty much about the 4 million people that receive care in health centers, in federally funded health centers. So my title, Where We Are, Where We Currently Are, and Where We Are Going. Okay, here's my disclosure. I have no disclosures. My disclosure is that I have no disclosures. Okay, so my objectives are going to be to talk a little bit about currently the types of quality activities that occur in health centers and FQHCs, give some examples of some of the quality measures that are currently in use in some health centers, and describe how all these future, and Paul touched on some of the future initiatives and requirements and how that's going to be interrelated with quality measures. And just talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we have in health centers, which I think, of course, would mirror what happens in the larger private practice setting in terms of trying to implement quality improvement. First, I'm just explaining, I'm the dental consultant for NOAA, which is the National Network for Oral Health Access, which is the group that represents the dentists that work in and supporter of oral health providers in community, what used to be known as community health centers and are now known as health centers and other safety net settings. And one of our goals and objectives, mission, is to provide training or assistance in development and implementation of oral health quality improvement centers in health centers. So just a little, some factoids about health centers, and this is from the 2011 UDS, which is the Uniform Data System that is released by HRSA every year. Last year there were 1,128 federally funded health centers, and those are the ones that actually received 330 grant funding as part of their revenue sources. And out of those, 77% had a dental program associated with the medical program. And last year, totally, you can hear if you ever go to the NAC conference, which is the National Association of Community Health Centers, that the total users is 20 million people. So if you divide that into the 330 million people we have, it's whatever percentage that is of the total U.S. population derives their care from health centers. Now, if you look at the medical, at the dental users, you can see it's about 4 million. So, you know, it's almost, 1% of the U.S. population receives their health care, dental care, in health centers. You can see, just by looking at this, and which is kind of a sidelight, but maybe not, that, you know, there's capacity issues within health centers themselves. We don't have dental capacity for even every medical client that is in a health center to get dental services in the health center. You can see it's about 1 out of 4. So, again, that's just a resource allocation issue. And so why are we interested in the health center setting and evaluating quality is because actually it's part of the health center regulation, part of the Section 330 of the Public Health Service Act way back in 69 that funded initial health centers, and later on when they were reauthorized in 89 was that every health center has to have an ongoing QI/QA program. And that the health centers, if you know, can be self-insured malpractice insurance through the Federal Torts Claim Act. And part of that application process that the health center has to go through is that they have to submit their QA/QI plans and evidence that they have QI/QA committee minutes. So again, pretty much every health center has to have, like I said, a QA committee, QI committee, and a plan. The variability, of course, is whether or not there's a dental or an oral health person on that QA/QI committee, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And just in general, health centers, because of their nature, it's understood because of the relationship that we have with HRSA that we know that in the future, you know, quality and quality measurement, quality improvement is going to be part of what is going to be going on in health centers. And so, again, there is, at the higher levels, there's a general focus on trying to educate people about quality. But of course, you know how that can take a while to filter down to the actual ground level of what happens on a daily basis. So again, health centers are funded, you know, through the Health and Human Services, through HRSA, the Health Services Resource Administration, and then if you look at the gigantamous org chart, it would come down to the Bureau of Primary Health Cares, and that's where health centers are funded. And so HRSA has this whole set of quality-related objectives that have been sort of released and, again, trying to be implemented, you know, within the last few years and into the future. And again, part of it is that in the 330 regulations, it says all health centers must have and implement a QIQA plan. You know, it's in the issue of meaningful use and the use of electronic health records. You know, part of that is that all health centers essentially should be on an electronic health record, you know, by 2014. And this is across all sites because, you know, many health centers have multiple access points for the medical and dental services, or all their services, and so that, again, that there's health record, HIT, in every site and also across provider types. So, again, it's not just the medical, but it's also going to be dental, behavioral, the farm, everything will eventually be on an electronic health record. And part of, you know, all the money that was came out, you know, with in the ACA was, you know, a lot of health centers actually used that money in the last 3 years to get IT if they didn't have it already for their medical and dental and other, so that they create that infrastructure, which is going to lead to being able to collect the type of data that could be used for quality improvement activities. HRSA also has a big push. Those of you familiar with health centers, you know, 10 years ago it was JCO accreditation. They wanted every health center to go through JCO accreditation and provided funding for the training and to pay for the application process. Now they've moved forward to NCQA, patient-centered medical home recognition. There's a current push now for all health centers to get patient-centered medical home recognition, and again, HRSA is paying for training for health center staff and the application fees. And so many health centers are either have already achieved it or in the process of getting their they have different levels, but stage 3 is the highest level of NCQA recognition. And another, again, for our purposes, is improve clinical outcomes, which is ideally the goal is that all health centers should be able to meet or exceed the Healthy People 2020 goals on one UDS clinical measure. And if you part of the UDS data that every health centers, as you know, are kind of interesting because there's some things that are prescribed. Like, for example, you must, you know, have a QA/QI committee. You have to provide primary care services. You have to provide enabling services in the regulations, and you have to, you know, do the UDS. But at the same time, there's wide variability in health centers in terms of how you implement to achieve to something. So, you know, it's kind of like an in-between. And so, again, if you look at the UDS now, they've started to add different criteria in terms of the number that, again, health centers have to collect every year, very broad, the percentage of diabetic patients, the percentage of HIV patients, you know, so they're starting to get into the to get people used to the idea of having to collect, you know, this population-based data. So, of course, you can see that it's only going to be a matter of time before you have to qualify that data, you know, controlled, uncontrolled, you know, that type of stuff. So, again, as I said, there's wide variability, and especially, again, in the dental programs. So as relates to quality assurance and quality improvement, again, if you look at health centers, you have some where there's very early adopters that, you know, are going forward and are way, way ahead, like in terms of what they're actually doing, like I said, on a daily basis with quality improvement. And there's others that are still, I mean, in general, the older concepts of quality assurance are relatively well accepted and disseminated throughout health centers. And so, again, we already can see that we have some early adopters talking about some of the very things that Paul talked about that would be happening in the future, already happening in some health centers. So like I said, the concept of quality assurance, you know, is actually relatively well, I guess you could say, accepted and widely disseminated in health science. You can go all the way back to this monograph or book that actually came out as early as in 18, yeah, that would be really interesting. That was really far ahead. 1985, which was done by Neil Denby, and if you know Region 2, New York, you know that area, yeah. Which is actually, it's very interesting because, again, given that long ago, this is actually, you know, for doing peer review, both direct and indirect, and the criteria, and really, you can go to pretty much to any health center in the country and find a standard peer review form that, you know, is really based off of this original work, and even what you see in a lot of like insurance plans, you know, when they come and do peer review, again, based on this original work. The challenge has been, again, in health centers, and I think this would be the case in private practice or really in any dental setting, is to move from the idea of quality assurance, which is just measuring, you know, which is just looking at something, you have your criteria, you know, your widget, you know, is the widget good? Is it good enough, you know, to go to the next you know, part of the assembly line, versus this idea of quality improvement, you know, which is this whole approach about, you know, what the if your widget was good enough, but can you make it even better? You know, and this whole thing about the concept of using data as a baseline for you to improve your system to then make it better as you continually measure. And so that concept is, again, where we're currently at right now in health centers, because some people get it, and it depends on what else has been going on in the health center, because a lot of health centers have been exposed to quality improvement methodology through the collaboratives. When HRSA was doing oral disparities collaboratives, like the diabetes collaborative, which actually started in 1998, so it's been almost 15 years. But depending on which health center you were at, your medical department may have been familiar with that, but your dental department may not have been exposed to that. So in general, you know, oral health and dentistry behind, even in the health center setting, even though the potential is already there, most of the staff not been exposed to those concepts. So what we currently have right now, again, in most health centers, is you can have an elementary or through advanced, but most of them is still relatively elementary, QI program, which is usually will encompass almost 100% of the time will have peer review. You know, there's usually a patient survey aspect to it. Oh, I just saw somebody else I know. Adverse outcomes, you know, review of adverse outcomes, and then it starts getting into the service use or outcome measures. It's interesting because it goes from basically looking at individual results, like when you do peer chart review, and then it starts to go into measuring, then it starts looking into population. So you can kind of see, you know, how it's going in that direction, again, of more aggregate. But the key is, of course, even if you do these things, the point is you can get a result from looking at all of these. And the question is, you know, do you have the mindset or the system infrastructure set up to just say, is the result that we got good enough, or do we have a system for being able to make it better and continuously look at it? So, again, this is where we're trying to get to in terms of training and educating people, is this idea about continuously striving to improve from that baseline by measure. So again, most health centers, I think it's very safe to say, or you do peer review, you know, again, where they look at everybody's charts and it's random, and again, it's this well-defined criteria, and then you can do indirect, which is, again, looking at the chart or the electronic record, or you can do direct, which is where you actually bring patients in. And the interesting piece about doing direct is when you bring a patient in, you can get some kind of qualitative measure of the experience from the patient. You know, the downside, though, doing that is it's much more expensive and time-consuming than an indirect review. Again, most health centers do, that's actually another part of the requirement, that every year you have to do some type of patient satisfaction survey. And as you know, a lot of health centers use the CAP survey, which you're also, I think, familiar with when you go to your own doctor and it asks you if you had to wait more than 15 minutes in the waiting room, you know, that kind of thing. That's part of the CAP survey, which is a validated survey. We don't see a lot of this. We could, but we don't, which is health centers using, you know, one of these, the validated oral health outcomes surveys on patients, like the OHIP, because, and again, even though we have, I mean, part of what we do at NOAA in our trainings is expose people to this, but, you know, with the understanding that you really have to do the OHIP, you know, when you start treatment and then when you finish treatment, again, and we have not had a lot of success with a breakthrough in terms of having more health centers adopt that. Although, like I said, most of them do the satisfaction piece, which is but really more of a, how they perceive the process of the care versus how they actually perceive the actual results, you know, on their own quality of life. And in health centers, like I said, most if a health center has a QA, QI committee, that's where if you have an adverse incident, you know, that's going to go to the committee, even if there isn't a dental person on the committee. If there is an adverse incident in the dental clinic that relates to dentistry, you know, it goes, it's supposed to be written up and go to the committee, and you're supposed to use that as part, you know, identifying, you know, root cause analysis and figuring out how to correct your system in order to make it better. So, and here we start getting into, in some health centers, the ones that, and actually I will say this, I think that there's a lot, I don't know the penetration, but it's not like it's a few. I would say, like, when we ask people in the audience, in a meeting or something, at least 50% of the people raise their hand and say that they are tracking something electronically. The most common, and we'll go, I'll go into some of them, but for example, something like the HEDIS measure, which essentially the HEDIS measure, which is the, you know, the annual dental visit. You know, at the health center setting, and again, as you can see, the interesting piece is depending which health center you're at, you get a very low rate because, as you've seen with capacity, you know, over, I mean, maybe for individual clinics, it's different. You may have a clinic where you have a very large dental program and you can see 50, 60% of your medical population, but you may have others, you know, where you can only see 10, 20% of your medical population. So, and that's the population that you would be using. You know, you have to, whatever your N would be in terms of how many people actually had a dental visit. But again, it's relatively easy to track that in the health center setting. And as you'll see, a lot of people do, but not maybe with specific populations. You know, most health centers see a lot of Medicaid patients and so are interested in knowing what population of their health center patients that are on Medicaid, you know, have a visit and have, can break down pretty much all the dental patients that are seen into the payer source, just like, and see, again, how, you know, as a Paul mentioned, you know, in a lot of states, that's one of the key things people look at is what percentage of the Medicaid population got a dental visit. So, and again, the challenge is to make the average health center, dentist, dental staff, you know, again, understand that measure, and I don't think this is going to be just dentists. I mean, this is dentists as a whole. I mean, if you mirror the whole population of dentists, to get them to see that measuring something is the is moving from the individual to the in thinking in a population, public health level, that that is what's going to drive the change, as Paul mentioned. So if you have something you're measuring and you have a baseline, then you develop, you change your system in order to make that baseline better, whether it's making something more of something or less of something, depending on what you're looking at. And that's how you're going to be able to show, you know, that you're improving healthcare in, you know, into the outcome, and show that your interventions are working. So in health centers right now, again, and I think that I would say at least half health centers are tracking something, but we know that pretty much everything we're tracking is basically a process measure. You know, we're doing the annual oral health visit. And the way it works, for example, a lot of health centers, if you're looking, for example, at pregnant women, you know, or diabetics, because we're able, because, and again, this is what the advanced health centers are doing. If you are using diagnosis codes on the medical side, you can tease out your entire medical population that has diabetes, and then you cross-reference that population with the people that have had a dental visit, you know, within that population, or perinatal patients. So you can see how, again, looking at specific populations, the health centers will look and see how many, if they're targeting, for example, to get perinatal patients in for a dental visit while pregnant, you know, you can track that, you know, over the year. The treatment plan completed measure, or it's also called the disease elimination measure. So again, the health center setting, every, and this is within the dental clinic, every patient that has had an exam, has a treatment plan, you know, then you can track if you've completed that treatment plan. And again, that's something you can get a baseline on, and then, you know, you improve it. Everything, like I said, with the perinatal, if you're initial, it's 22% of your perinatal population, and every year you take steps, you know, you figure out how can you get more pregnant women in. Then you go out and you make friends with your perinatal program. You know, you start using WIC. You know, and those kinds of the system changes again that will cause your measure to rise from baseline. And again, in some of the health centers, they're looking. You know, do all kids, for example, kids 0 to 5. You know, are they in? Again, looking at the it could be looking at the medical population of kids 0 to 5. You know, how many of these kids came in and had a fluoride treatment? You know, or conversely, you could go kids, you know, 6 to 8, how many of them have, got a sealant, you know, this type of thing. Other common measures that are currently in use in health centers is oral, for example, how many kids, you could say 0 to 5 got oral health education, but in the medical setting. Okay. And the other existing measures, for example, periodontal exam, you know, if you have HIV or if you're diabetic. Some of the very, very, now here we are getting into very, very few, because the issue with collecting these measures is the IT capability. So, for example, just to go back, something like the treatment plan completed measure, you know, that doesn't exist in your average dental EDR. So you have to create a dummy code for that. So for a lot of these measures, that really the IT has not caught up with it. So you have health centers basically customizing again, which is why you get so much variability. For these early adopters are basically doing it by themselves. They have IT where people are interested in, you know, looking at these things, or basically the whole health center buys into being able to track and look at quality improvement, including in the dental program. And so the IT, you know, is okay, you know, at the health center level with coming in doing these extra things, like, for example, creating these dummy codes. So right now, again, so it's very, very few health centers that are doing this, but we know that there are some that actually are able to track or are tracking, for example, kids, you know, who anybody, it could be kids or it could be adults, but it's really usually kids that have developed tooth decay, you know, since the last visit. So again, it's very few, because you have to see that you're tracking this on the individual level, you know, each kid that comes in, and then they have a certain diagnosis code. Now, either use existing ICD-9 codes or you create your own set of dummy codes on, if you're looking at level of disease, and then, you know, do you have it, and then at the subsequent visit, you track it. And again, usually you have to have a registry or a separate population for all of these kids that you're tracking. So you can see that the IT required to do that, this is why very few are doing it. And if you look at something, but you can see that the potential is there, right? For the people already grasp, again, our early adopter health centers, that the potential, just like they're doing at Health Partners in some of these large insurance plans, to be able to track these things. Another interesting thing that we've heard actually several health centers doing is tracking their diabetics. So what they're doing is they have their diabetic population, they track how many of them have come in to get dental care, and then they're tracking the H1C levels in those patients, you know, over 1 to 2 years, those that have had periodontal and completed, you know, their treatment plan versus those that haven't. And again, anecdotally, most are showing improvement in the H1C level over a cohort of from the same health center that has not gotten into dental care. Again, I mean, we're talking maybe a couple, you know, 100, 200 people, but again, and this sounds like it would make a great research study, but again, at the local level, we have, you know, people that are definitely getting this, the whole concept. That's just that it's time to change. I'm changing from what we're currently doing to some of the factors that will be impacting health centers in the future in terms of what we think that we're going to be doing, what we're trying to prepare for. That's kind of like the quality environment. Now, in health centers, honestly, to be honest with you, you know, CMS basically provides 48% of patient revenues. That's through Medicaid and Medicare. Now, for the medical. So you can see that in the health center, from the health center, I think, perspective, whatever, if CMS says something, then it will be so, you know, because, again, that's pretty much most of the revenue. Now, of course, in the Dell department, since we, you know, it's not part of Medicare, it's the revenues that are derived from Medicaid is significantly less. But still, because you know the Dell program is located with, you know, within the health center, basically you're going to do whatever it is that the rest of the health center is doing. HRSA, again, our grand poobahs, have. It's interesting because they have not officially, you know, they have not announced, for example, at the health center setting that, you know, all Dell programs must collect this, you know, do this particular measure. They have not said that. But at the same time, for example, if you look at the HIV/AIDS Bureau, they do have quality measures. And one of them is that each patient has a dental visit and has a periodontal exam. So they have already, there is a precedent for them actually going out and you know, and dictating quality measures for certain, you know, budget area. So really, I mean, at any time, I mean, HRSA in some respects is loath to do things like that, but they have actually. So, you know, again, if they came out tomorrow and said these are the three quality measures that all dental programs must track, then we must all track it. Paul measured the NQF measures review. Then there's meaningful use. And again, we have our one leading health indicator. And again, this upcoming idea of pay for performance or outcomes-based reimbursement. We understand that this is what's coming, and so our goal is, again, to try to prepare, you know, health center dental programs for these changes. Just to review what Paul said about NQF, again, it was commissioned to look at all the measures. Actually, I thought it was 257. That's what Bob told me. Bob,
you probably have it right.
Okay.
I just said it off the top of my head.
Okay. And yes, most of them were process measures. And most of that, the ones that were relatively well-defined, and however, many of the process measures were also redundant. They were basically measuring the same thing, but in different ways, and very few were qualitative in scope. But at the same time, NQF, you know, when they have blessed the measure, they have blessed it, and that gives it much more cachet and importance and can then be used for other purposes. And as of today, these are the four NQF-approved Dell measures. You can go onto the NQF website and look them up for the actual. This actually will give you the specific, you know, denominator and numerator on how you figure this out. And again, it's the annual dental visit, children who have received preventive dental care. This third one is very interesting because it's in the medical setting, okay, the primary caries prevention as part of the well or ill child visit, and children who have dental decay or cavities. So again, these are the official NQF approved dental measures, which actually ties in then to meaningful use. Now, as many of you are aware, initially in the meaningful use, there were no electronic dental records that complied with it, so dental providers were not able to really do anything, even though the health centers have signed up most of the dentists as providers. That was with the assumption that we were going to have to be complying and looking at the medical meaningful use criteria, such as, you know, weight, height, smoking cessation, blood pressure, because there are some things, you know, that we can do in the dental setting. However, now, and don't quote me on this because it changes every day, at the moment there's three electronic dental systems that have been certified, and basically they have all applied. So, you know, we expect more to be coming on. Of course, once your electronic system is certified, then that opens up, you know, stage two participation basically for dental providers. And now there are two oral health measures that have been included in stage two, and you can see that these are the NQF measures. So, of course, now this means that your EDR will come preloaded to be able to collect this, you know, if it's a certified EDR. So, again, the IT infrastructure is being set up to be able to start to collect data that will be used for quality improvement and quality assessment and quality accountability in the future. And that is the amount of children that have dental cavity, and then the well child dental caries visit. I mean, I'm sorry, preventive visit. There is the Dental Quality Alliance, which Paul mentioned, which again is 29 entities, and its mission to advance performance measures and means to improve oral health through consensus building. So again, and from the health center perspective, you know, we're waiting to see what they come up with, and then the question is also, you know, will it have cachet, or will it have pull, you know, compared to like something that is in meaningful use? So again, we're just waiting to see what comes out of this. I didn't include this. I had one, and I tossed it out on global challenges of why it's difficult to do quality improvement just in general in dental care, which I'm sure you know of, but I guess I'll throw out a few of them. And one is, of course, we don't use diagnosis codes routinely. We actually don't really have a lot of guidelines in terms of what is proper clinical practice. Again, most of the measures that we have are quantitative and process versus qualitative and outcome-ish. There's not the IT is a huge barrier, especially when you're talking about measures that cut across disciplines. You know, again, like the diabetes piece or the perinatal piece, because you have to have IT capability on both sides and they have to talk to each other. Otherwise, you can't see. You have to figure out how to cross it so you can see whether or not you've done the correct thing to the perinatal patient. So, and this is the case in health centers also, although we do have some qualities in terms of co-location and the fact that we do have co-location and we have integrated IT system in some health centers that actually, again, are the ones that are the early adopters or the ones that have these qualities. Because, again, some of the local challenges, again, at the health center setting, and I already talked about how unfamiliar, and you can actually, I think, translate this, though, really to private practice setting also, unfamiliarity with quality improvement concepts and methodology, you know, how to do a PDSA cycle, you know, what it means to continually measure. Again, lack of data collection infrastructure, limited use of computerized information systems. That, again, the IT issues, I cannot stress enough how IT is a primary barrier. Because, again, you can see that people that have been early adopting are basically doing it by themselves. Because, again, there really isn't this. The actual system doesn't physically, you know, in terms of computers, and then the programming, again, to be able to collect data and to be able to cross-discipline. And again, at the health center level, competing needs. You know, sometimes, you know, if oral health is in a large part of the program, you know, to try to get, you know, people to pay attention and try to do some of the same things that they've already been doing in the medical setting in dental can be, at the local level, difficult. But at the same time, we know from the early adopter health centers that are doing these very interesting and exactly, again, moving into this era, you know, of accountability, we know that the health centers that are the early adopters are the ones where every department, every discipline, whether it's medical, behavioral, dental, have been trained in quality improvement methodology and they understand the terminology and the process. So, again, they know what to do. These are the health centers where dental is an active participant in the whole health center management, including in the quality assurance and QI committee. Again, so there's an understanding of how you use data and measures across populations to drive change. These are health centers that, now they may not have a fully integrated, most of them do, but you don't have to have an integrated system as long as you have a system set up for how you can talk electronically and No problem. Most of the health centers that are early adopters are using diagnosis codes in some way, even though it's not required for billing, but they're still using it anyway because that's how they identify their populations that, again, they're tracking. And they have, you know, a history of basically interdisciplinary collaboration between departments, usually medical and dental, but also behavioral and others. In the long term, again, one of the things that we're trying to get, you know, health centers to understand is that the risks of non-awareness, you know, in the dental clinic or in the dental program about what's coming in the future is not a good thing because, again, we do believe that quality measures will be tied to future payment methods. There's certification and recognition by national organizations that, you know, like, for example, the NCQA that may in the future be necessary in order to get payment or meet certain standards. And since dentistry and oral health is part of the whole health system, you know that interdisciplinary collaboration and integration is the wave of the future, part of the triple aim. Bring the mouse back into the body, right? So not just intuitively, but I think that science will show that it gives you better health outcomes if that's the mindset. And in order for us to continue to be a part of this, you know, we have to move in the same direction, you know, with medical and with other disciplines. So our role at NOAA, and again, what we've been doing and what we're going to continue to do is disseminate information, again, on the trends and requirements, and as things come out to our members, we continue to identify and study early adopter health centers that are already doing some of these, again, more interesting, looking at outcomes data across disciplines, and spread, you know, their best practices, collect and share their best practices with other health centers, and again, try to act as a training and technical resource assistance source for our members. So these are some of our resources. We have a chapter on quality, which, you know, we have to update. This actually just came out last year, but, you know, now we're now going to be updating all of our manuals every 3 years because stuff changes. That's my contact information. I know this is going to be on the program website later. So in conclusion, you know, what's always changing is the environment in which healthcare and oral healthcare exist, but what never changes is our mission in health centers to strive to provide highest quality care we can to the people, the populations we serve. And
well, are there any questions for these two lovely presenters? Yes.
Deshondra Kleinman, that was a wonderful overview, both of the presentations. Thank you. I was going to ask Irene about the patient-centered medical home certification in the community health centers, and to what degree are some payment innovations being considered as part of that certification in order to pay for performance?
Okay. As far as I know, there is no payment innovation yet, assigned or that would be assigned to achieving that recognition. What HRSA is currently doing, like I said, is paying for health centers to go to trainings in order to be able to get the recognition and paying for the fees. But as of right now, I don't know if any, for example, if you have that recognition that you would get like more grant money or anything like that. I'm not aware of anything, and I don't know if anybody else is. That's how it was with JACO also. They suggested and strongly wanted health centers to apply for JACO accreditation, but a health center that had JACO accreditation never got like extra money. It would be interesting because I think potentially if you wanted to do that, it could be through CMS, you know, would be that, oh, go ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how that rolls out when you're actually talking about the pay for performance, because as most of you know, the majority of health centers, well, at least in the dental, are reimbursed through the encounter based. So, you know, you'd have to fold that in the same way that, for example, for those health centers that actually are reimbursed for dental visits, what they do in the capitation, you know, what they do is at the end of the year, there's a wraparound that's the difference between the cap rate and, you'll say, the actual rate. So it would be interesting to think, again, if you were going to pilot it, what Paul says, that you have your encounter rate, but they hold back a piece of it, you know, and then that would depend on what your performance would be on whatever the measures are in your populations at the end of the year. So, I mean, I don't know of any of that going on in the health center setting, but you can see how that's one way it could potentially work.
But can I just ask you a question, Ryan, so don't go away. And Petra, you may have some information about this as well. My understanding, I know the conversation in California, I understand nationally, is there's now a conversation about moving away from the encounter-based rate in the health center system to more of a what might be considered the equivalent of a state block grant. In other words, that what states want to do, the reason they want to move towards managed care is they want to know what their budget's going to be. And when you have a volume-based system, whether it's fee-for-service or whether it's encounters, if you're running the state budget, you don't know how much money you're going to spend that year. So if you can go to a managed care system and say, this is how much money we're going to spend on dental, period, that's our line item, then it becomes a fixed expense. And so they're looking at making health center payments more fixed expenses tied to performance measures and then giving health centers more flexibility to do the kind of things that they would do to meet those performance measures. So that may actually make big changes in terms of people's incentives to adopt these kind of quality improvement measures. And Peter,
I think what's been helpful on the medical side is when there's a risk pool. And so, you know, there's the basic payment, but then, you know, health centers have been able to capture additional revenue through risk pools with the IPAs or with some of the managed care plans. And I don't know if that's an option in dental as well.
You know, the problem with dental, well, is that the capacity, you know, the risk pool, because since most health centers, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. Since most health centers don't have dental capacity for all the people in their medical pool, so it's like you could adjust your risk pool just by the patient population that you could give services to, because most health centers right now are actually are impacted and usually are providing comprehensive oral health services, a lot of them to specific populations that have a medical reason, like perinatal or diabetics or HIV. And so, you know, it's not a true risk pool. It's already, like, you've already selected out a lot of high-risk, high-caries populations just by nature of the fact that you don't really have 100% access in most health centers. You see the data, like I said, the capacity data. So I don't know how you would get a, I mean, unless you'd have to adjust for that, you know, and account for, again, having a higher risk of the highest of the high-risk populations would probably be the ones that are getting dental services in terms of care resources. And there was one other thing I was going to say, now I can't remember. Darn. Okay.
I just want to add something to that. So just as we're beginning to, if you believe any of this stuff, then your mind is going to your mind is going to start to go to, okay, so how do we do that? What are the steps that we need to take to move towards this accountable world? What would that world look like? So let me just give you a little vision related to the health center world. So I think actually the health center, I think one reason for using that as an example today is health centers are probably the best poised segment of the oral health delivery system to actually take some significant steps in this direction because of the way they're organized, because of the integration with medicine. At least they're in the same building sometimes, and they don't always talk to each other, but at least they're set up in more ways than the other parts of the dental delivery system to make some advances. So imagine a world where the health center was now being paid for based on the oral health of the population that's within their geographic catchment area. And they all have geographic catchment areas, right? So these are the people that you're supposed to serve, and these are the low-income people in your catchment area, and we're going to do, let's say, an independent surveillance of those people. Let's say we're going to even focus on kids, independent surveillance of those kids. And so we're going to know what the oral health is of those children that are in your catchment area. Not the kids that walk through the door of the health center, but the kids who live in that catchment area. And we're actually going to put a part of your payment at risk for improving the oral health of the people who are in your geographic catchment area. So, you know, right now, as Irene just said, health centers are, most of them are pretty impacted. They provide the vast majority of the services are with someone sitting in a dental chair, which is why that they have long waiting times and it's hard to get people in, and they're limited to the number of people that can be seen. But imagine a world where they're now being paid on the health of the people in their community, and they began to use some of the new tools that are available, realizing that much of what is provided by dental providers these days is preventive and early intervention and diagnostic services. And those things can all be done in school, in a Head Start center, and other places where the population is. And so you can begin to use these telehealth collaborations and you move your services out into the community, double, triple. You can do a lot better job at actually getting that bonus that's now in your payment system if you were to reserve those dental chairs for the people with advanced disease that can only be treated in a dental chair by the dentist because you need all this advanced equipment, and do a lot of the preventive early intervention and diagnostic services all done out in the community. So this kind of movement towards a new payment system, of course, coupled with changes in regulations so that you could actually get paid for doing these things, which are various now, but coupled with those changes could bring about dramatic changes in the way at least health centers and then other providers start to think about how do we get a population healthy.
The thing I forgot to say was that the limiting piece is always it depends on the individual health center and how much they value oral health. Because anytime you talk block grant, you get the same thing, you know, that you currently have in Medicaid, which is that the majority of funding goes to general medical health and people marginalize oral health. So, and how long would that process take? mean, people are barely buying in now to that, actually fixing the dental raising the dental status of an individual in a population will actually improve the general. You know, there would be like, you would have to go through that process where people would finally figure that out, and so they would finally give oral health more of the resources that would be needed to take that happen. So there's always, that's always the I guess you could say, the danger, the cautionary tale. Now, the other thing I'll say is the health centers is actually an interesting, the reason it's an interesting place to be is because compared to the other two, I guess you could say, government-sponsored, you know, which is like the military and the Indian Health Service, you know, because they're much more, the pro is it's much more standardized, much better data collection, but at the same time, because it's much more hierarchical, sometimes, you know, you can't get as rapid of the innovation as you can in the health center. However, in the health center, you'll get it, but it's only in a few places, you know, so then it's not standardized. But you can get more innovation and experimentation because it's a little bit of a less regimented structure. Well, just one, I guess you could say, emerging is, you know, the whole concept of Canberra, right? Which kind of gets into, if you do the medical equivalent would be if somebody has hypertension of a certain level, you know, there's like a prescribed treatment, you know, set of drugs that you're supposed to take and diamox, whatever, you know, that it, so it would be the same sort of thing. So if you had a child that was a certain level of caries risk, then the prescribed treatment would be, you know, whatever, diamodification, fluoride varnish, whatever, xylitol, blah, 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 in a certain interval. And so that would be, you could bundle that payment, you know, for, you know, the payment, if you did, or if you, there'd be a different way you could do it, is if you actually did that, then you would get your payment, or you would get the payment, and that's what you'd expect, you know, that kind of a thing. So that's just one example of how you could use that to dictate your treatment plan.
And I think maybe that's an example of using some evidence-based guidelines to determine are people doing the right things. So, of course, as Irene said, we have it's one of our challenges in oral health care is to develop more evidence-based guidelines because a lot of things that we don't really have guidelines about. You know, I just related to the treatment plan. I think I want to just caution us to think about that as a complicated thing, which may not produce necessarily the kind of results we want if we focus on that. The California Association of Health Plans, I actually went through a 2-day training that they have for their dentists who are doing site visits to member dental offices in certain of their group plans. Sorry. And they have this really well worked out system of quality assurance. And to underscore what Irene said earlier, quality assurance is when you have a checklist of these are things you're supposed to do and you check, you know, did you do them or not, which is at a much lower level than quality improvement where you're just trying to do things better. But in this quality assurance system, they would look at the treatment plan and they would look at the treatment plan and they would look at the progress notes and see did the things that were on the treatment plan get done, and the office would be rated as having done a good job if in fact the things that were on the treatment plan actually took place and there was some notes about them. What they were not looking at was did the treatment plan itself make any sense for that particular patient. And I think, of course, that requires us doing a much better job of organizing and promulgating evidence-based guidelines about what would the right thing to do be.
We could give a whole separate lecture on that. Suffice it to say that we actually, again, just we've been doing a lot of work on this, and we have identified at the moment, not I think it's either 8 different potential IT configurations that exist in health centers right now. and this is, you're not going to like this, because that's that, and that is our main problem, with varying levels of ability to talk to each other. And it goes all the way from being still on, see if I can list them off really quickly. One or the other is still on paper, but soon to be on. There's one, there, you can have a configuration, and I might as well, again, I shouldn't be naming names. You can do eClinical Works, which is the medical system, and you can create templates in eClinical Works, so both dental and medical are really running off the medical system. You can have, which is actually the most common configuration in health centers, is people have Dentrix and some other EMR that don't speak to each other because of licensing issues. Then you can have Dentrix, and if you pay for the bridge software, the HL7 bridge, which is what a lot of health center controlled networks do, that's part of what the services you can get from them. If you pay for the bridge, then Dentrix can talk to others. Then you have other ones where it's complete, where you have like NextGen and QSI, where they're, or Open Dental and eClinical Work, where it's two separate systems, but they do speak to each other across the thing. And we don't really have this yet, the completely, truly integrated EHR, which would go beyond the health center and actually goes across, you know, other sites. So those are like, this is what we currently have. So really it's a resource issue. I mean, it's a resource issue because if somebody would just say all dental and medical software, I don't know who that would be. It always has to be the government, right? Should have to talk to each other, then that infrastructure would exist. So again, because we have variability in each health center, and there's no impetus right now for standardization across, you know, language standardization, that is less what I meant about how that's one of the biggest barriers. Yes.
A comment on the challenge of the electronic health record. I mean, those things do exist, and one example of that is in the system of integrated managed care that's government run and government paid for, which is part of Veterans Affairs.
Yeah.
There is a single integrated electronic health record
that
incorporates all aspects of medical care, behavioral health care, oral health care, that cuts across a facility, that cuts across an entire system of care nationally, that's accessible to all with half of the
Yeah.
Those things exist. So the technology is there, the actual demonstration that such implementation technology works effectively has been documented. It's a matter of will in the various players outside of
And I think, Irene, when you said, you know, someone needs to say this, that they need to talk to each other, well, you know, someone has said it. There was $48 billion, with a B, in the stimulus package for the development of intraoperable healthcare records. Now, we have a long ways to go to actually achieve that. So the Veterans Administration is intraoperable. In other words, it works within the Veterans Administration, the medical and dental thing. But, you know, sort of the holy grail out there, which we're moving towards as a country, and there's money behind it, is to get interoperable. So across systems, you can begin to aggregate data. And that, of course, that's going to really allow us to then have meaningful use and incentives based on disparate providers where you can aggregate the data. So I think we're moving there. We're certainly not there yet, but that's where we're going.
Culture and really put it into our practice without thinking of it.
One minute to respond. I'll give a quick answer to that. So, you know, I think that that you're right in saying that the general healthcare system is way farther down the road in terms of thinking about these things and preparing for them than the oral healthcare system. That's pretty clear. But I think there's two things that give me some hope. One is it's clear that the oral health system has started. In the last hour, we've talked about multiple examples of important players that are already beginning to realize this has to happen in oral health and are beginning to move us in that direction. The second thing that gives me some hope is I think we can learn some things from what's happened in medicine. You know, the 10 years of paper performance, if you've looked at that literature, 10 years of paper performance experiments have had fairly mediocre results, particularly at the beginning. People really didn't know how to do that and are beginning as time goes, beginning as time goes by to get a better idea of how do you actually do pay performance, how do you collect data in a way that you can drive change and pay people for doing things that are actually going to produce the outcomes you want to produce rather than unintended consequences. So I think there's a lot of learning that's gone on in medicine about how to do this that we can take advantage of. But in terms of who's going to do it in oral health, well, I think, you know, maybe it's people in this room and others who are beginning to get this idea that that's where we're going. I think it's up to those who have actually seen that light to start to figure out how do we move our profession in this direction. Are we out of time?
Yeah, unfortunately, we're out of time. So I really want to thank our presenters and thank you for coming. Don't forget to turn your CE in.